I suck at jujitsu. How do I suck less?
I guess
this
sucks less.
Ladies and gentlemen, the
title
fight
level
leader of the
Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So, different episode for you guys today. I know we do different stuff all the time. This show is 260 episodes in, and we have no format for the show. We're just still winging it every time. But I had a fun idea, and it's kind of based off of next week's interview, or at least the idea is, and I think people are going to like it. And so I'll tell you guys at some point in this episode, maybe at the end, what next week's interview is going to be. It's probably going to be one of the biggest we've ever done. And so I think people really like that one. But I got to interview a black belt last week, and it'll come out next week. And he has been a black belt for 20 years. And just in that time, you know, we really started to talk and dig deep on certain things. And it got me thinking about how long I've been training jiu-jitsu. And it also got me thinking about something really interesting is I have this podcast that has 260 episodes. And I might have screwed up on what episode one was supposed to be. Because so many people, when I hear podcasts, they have this episode one that they tell you their story. And they give you, you know, they tell you basically why, I don't know, maybe why you should be listening to them or why they have an opinion about the topic or why they're excited about the topic. And this isn't just for jiu-jitsu shows. This is kind of for most podcasts that you hear really early on. People will tell you their story. And for me, it's funny. I've just like slowly told you guys my story throughout this entire podcast, throughout the 260 episodes. But I've never sat down and did an episode on this is why I started jiu-jitsu. This is what it was like for me. I went all the way through every rank under the same guy. I've never really, you know, I tell those things, but I've never really told the details of that story and how that looked and how, as I got better, I had people kind of pursuing me to be on their team and how the decisions I made is really a little kid, you know, 18, 19 years old that were big kind of business decisions and big life decisions. And I kind of can look back just a little bit now on those and have some cool perspective. Maybe it was doing my first master's division ever. I'm like, oh, I'm finally an old guy. I can look back. But regardless of the why, I really think you guys are going to enjoy the what of this episode. This episode is really just, it's my story, but it's also going to give you guys a lot of example for why I explain jiu-jitsu the way that I do it, why I teach jiu-jitsu the way that I do, and why I even have a podcast. And so with all that being said, we won't ramble anymore. We will go ahead and get into today's episode, a Midwest jiu-jitsu story, I guess you could call it. All right, guys, I'm going to be telling you my story today, and today's story, it kind of starts out the way any story in America, any good story in America starts in the ghetto. When I was growing up until I was actually like well into doing jiu-jitsu, up until I was 19, 20 years old, we lived in a place called Madison, Illinois. I always talk about Granite City where my gym is. Madison is the next town over. And so it's kind of like Granite City, which I'm sure you're not familiar with, Madison, which I'm sure you're not familiar with, and then East St. Louis, which if you know of the worst and most violent cities in America every single year, East St. Louis seems to be way up there. Okay. So, just it kind of a weird place to grow up in the middle of the Midwest. And, then one day, you know, I just typical kid, you know, my parents, you guys have met my dad a million times. He had been a fitness trainer. My mom was a massage therapist. She did some other things, but, for me, I was just, a typical kid that was chubby and Asian and liked playing video games, liked watching pro wrestling, and wasn't really that active. And so my mom made me start jiu-jitsu. She said I was overweight. I needed to – she actually for months had been pushing me to start taekwondo because my brother did taekwondo when he was growing up. And I had done some Gracie self-defense stuff when I was younger. And so I was young enough – I was at that age where I'm like, hey, I don't think taekwondo is what I want to be doing. I would like to do jiu-jitsu, but there was nowhere to train jiu-jitsu. You know, we're in the middle of nowhere. And then at 14 years old, one day, a new gym opens up. And it's not a local mom-and-pop jiu-jitsu school. It's not some random Brazilian guy decided, you know, just threw a dart and said, I'll move there, and started a jiu-jitsu school. This is really the first super facility in MMA history. Okay. People don't buy it when I tell them that. It really is. I mean, if you really look at the year, this was the first time somebody put over $1 million into the building of an MMA school. And this is like a rented building, right? This is not to buy the building. They just to update it and turn this gym into the facility it needed to be. These guys, I believe, put like seven figures into it. And so, spoiler alert, it doesn't return on investment for those guys. But it also just happens to be like 5 minutes from my house. And like to explain how small town you know, our small town was, and just the craziness that in 2008 they decided that, like, okay, the biggest MMA facility at the time we're going to put in Granite City, Illinois. It's called the Hit Squad. And so it was Hughes's intensive training. If you guys were familiar with MMA back then, Matt Hughes was huge. And somebody funded this gym. He put his name on it. They brought in coaches. He kind of chose what coaches. Well, just by, you know, that whole story is really cool, but by kind of random luck, I want to say Kyle told this story. My coach, Kyle, told this story really early on the podcast, but he was a purple belt. He's a very good MMA fighter. He was kind of even close to being a veteran at that time. You know, he had a good amount of fights under his belt, but he's trying to get to the next level, and he gets the opportunity to be the head jiu-jitsu coach at this MMA school. And so that's where Kyle and I meet. So Kyle Watson, for you guys who don't know, he and I, my first meeting with him, I'm 14 years old. They have an adult class. It's probably like 6 days a week, 5 days a week. It's very, very new, and it's very, very small. They really never figured out marketing very well at that school. And so Kyle actually did. So his jiu-jitsu program at the very end did end up blowing up. But at that time, everything was so small. And so I go in for my first, or I ask if I can come into my first class because it's adults only. And I was kind of small on top of being chubby at 14 years old. And I remember my dad asking, like, hey, do you think he could try this class? And Kyle just, I can still see it. Kyle just looked me up and down once really quick. And he goes, you know what? Let's let him try it. If it's too much, you know, he doesn't have to do it, but let's let him try it. And as silly as it sounds, you look at that one decision that was somebody else's decision. He didn't have to do that. There have been kids that I've looked at, even as a coach now, that I've said, you know, maybe you're a little too small, but we have a kids program, right? So it's not as big of a deal. He let me train. And night one, I learned triangle choke and I learned armbar. And it was like triangle and then armbar from the triangle and then back to triangle. And I was hooked. I was so sold. And keep in mind, like at this point in life, at 14, I had dedicated my life to becoming a pro wrestler. And so to make this career shift at this point, deep in my life, 14 years old, it's a big move. And so I make that move of, okay, jiu-jitsu is fun. And, you know, first couple months are like anybody else, or at least I would say the very average person. And I think an interesting question that I've really never been asked that you should always ask young guys or guys that start training really young is like, hey, were you good? Because now you're, I mean, yeah, you're a black belt. You're supposed to be good. But like when you started, was jiu-jitsu natural to you? And, you know, people will see that I have certain physical gifts and really flexible with like my hips, right? Helps jiu-jitsu a ton. So I think there is this assumption that like, oh, that must have just helped Josh and he would have been good. I was below average when I started. If you had put me in line with most 14-year-olds, I was not very good. I hadn't done really anything physical. I think the last physical thing that I did was at like 11 years old in, you know, 4 foot even, I played park league basketball. And just a little backtrack, I've told this story before. I get fouled down one in the semifinals of the playoffs. All we need, there's like 10 seconds left. All we need is to make this shot. And to be fair, at 11 years old, I did get fouled pretty hard. I remember landing on my knee and standing up, and it was the first time that like my body didn't do what I wanted it to. When I stood up, I was like, my knee is like shaking for some reason. That's weird. And then I'm like, well, I'm a free throw machine. And I went game on the line. And I missed the free throw. And then my coach said, Josh, we really could have used that free throw. And I said, Coach, I'll never do this sport again. And I left. And so that is the end of my athletic career. We're going to come out of retirement. You know, we're thinking about pro wrestling. We make the turn. It's pretty much the same thing as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But we make the tweak. We're going to do Jiu-Jitsu now. And I'm terrible. I think... First 3 months, I don't get one legitimate submission. And this isn't an established jiu-jitsu school. We all started at the same time. We all are 3 months in. Maybe there's some guys 4 or 5 months in that started a month or two before me right when the gym opened. But everybody else, we're all even. I just am not very good. And I'm tiny. And I decide I'm going to do a jiu-jitsu tournament because Kyle tells the team, hey, we have a tournament coming up. I'm on this super fight for the tournament. It's in Ohio. It's an 8-hour drive, which is what you would do for a local jiu-jitsu tournament back then. We go to the Ohio Grappling Challenge. I compete for the first time ever in an individual sport. And a lot of you guys have competed now. And the people, and I always am encouraging it, right? And people worry about like, but what if I'm not prepared? Okay. What if I'm not prepared? What if I have to fight this super tough guy? Whatever, right? I, again, on top of being terrible, I was so unprepared for that first tournament. First tournament, I go on my first real diet that I follow ever in my life because I'm excited about jiu-jitsu. I've been training about 4 months. I lose like 12 pounds over 2 months, right? And I am loving life. I'm like, you know, a skinny fat kid instead of a fat kid. And I'm weighing in at 130, and that's the division that I'm in. And I'm 14 years old. So they decided at that tournament, because when you drive 8 hours for a tournament, you were lucky to still get a match when you were 14. And so I go in for my first match. They decided they needed to combine the divisions, okay? So I've barely able to submit anybody in training, and all those guys suck. I'm tiny. I'm 130. My first match is against a kid that's 17, so he's 3 years older. He's 170 pounds. That's a significant difference. He has like 8 amateur MMA fights. He's like 6-2 as an amateur MMA fighter at 17 years old, and I am a chubby Asian kid. I cannot stress to you enough how bad of a scenario that is when you think about like, oh, worst case scenario, what would happen at a jiu-jitsu tournament? Well, you fight somebody that's significantly bigger, stronger, older, wiser, and better than you, and they're going at a C-red MMA fighter pace, and you forget how to tap. out of nervousness. That's what happened to me at this tournament. And that was my first jiu-jitsu match. I got submitted, and I want to say, I don't remember who it was. I want to say it might have been John Stutzman reffing my match. I should look back and try to figure out exactly who was reffing that match, because whoever it was probably saved my jiu-jitsu career, because I'm not exaggerating. I got put in an arm bar, and I was so nervous that I wasn't tapping to it. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to get out. I just remember it just happening so fast that I was like, what is going on? And the ref stopped it and was like, hey, dude, you should have tapped to that. And I was like, I'm sorry, I forgot. My bad. And so next, I end up having three more matches that day. I go 2-2. I get another kid who's in my actual age group, actual weight class. He walks up to me and I'm watching him warm up with a kata. So, you know, this is jiu-jitsu tournaments in 2008. You are literally grappling against people who don't train grappling arts and are just like, we'll just go, it's a martial arts tournament. We'll just go compete in it. And so, you know, this kid asked me before the match what my element was. And I was like, I think I'm going to beat this kid. I'm not very good at this, but this guy, there's no way he's any good. And so I hit my first ever submission. It's a triangle. Spoiler alert. I hit a lot of those as time goes on. But first ever submission, I end up beating that same kid again a second time. And then I lose in the key final by a point or two. And first tournament experience was awesome, right? It was that first individual competition. It was just so hard to explain how much fun it was for a kid that really hadn't done much else other than play video games, right? It was just, I was hooked and I could feel it. And it wasn't like my parents weren't like, oh, let's find what tournaments you could do next. It wasn't like that. It was like, I was hooked. I couldn't wait to look online and tell my dad, hey, there's this tournament in 3 months. Maybe we could do that one, you know, in Chicago. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, let's do that one. And so from there, from 14, my life starts to change. It starts to go from I am this unconfident, chubby Asian kid that couldn't fight to I'm this confident, chubby Asian kid that could fight, you know? And I can't even explain to you. I can't even get into that mindset. Obviously, it was 16 years ago now, but I can't even get into and explain what I cared about at that age before jiu-jitsu, because from then on, life was just different. It was just like, I finally had something to dedicate to. I was always really good in school, like in high school. I got one B on a test ever. And I got grounded for that, just so you know. Just so you guys are worried, like, is Josh really Asian? Yeah, I really did get grounded for a B. But one B ever. Very, very good in school. Until I discovered jiu-jitsu. I still stayed in school, still stayed getting straight A's because I had to. But I had no more investment in school. Hopefully your child didn't hear that part, but I'll just tell you guys straight up, I was done with school. I knew at 6 months that I wanted to be a jiu-jitsu coach. And it was, I remember telling my dad so certain, like it wasn't a big deal. Like, oh, I finally found what I'm going to be when I grow up. And I get to meet this guy. That is, you know, Kyle's my age now, at that time, I think he was 29. So a year younger than me now. And, you know, all he does is train and fight and teach. And I was like, yeah, I like this. This is the coolest guy I know anyway. I want to do what he does. And I remember telling my dad, like, yeah, I want to do jiu-jitsu. And I just remember the excitement. Like, I want to teach this. He was so excited. He was like, oh my gosh, finally this kid has a direction. And I really did go after it from there. I really did go like, I'm going to train every day. I remember I used to go to youth group at my church on Wednesday nights. And it was the only night that I wasn't training jiu-jitsu, or the only day that I wasn't training jiu-jitsu. And I just remember being like, if I could just get my mom to let me go to jiu-jitsu that night, if I could just get to go to jiu-jitsu that night, I would be so much better. I would be getting so much more training. And I was obsessed. And then when I did that, and this is the part I was saying your kids shouldn't listen to. Then I went into like, how can I get out of school? And my principal was really cool. Like I said, when you get straight A's, a lot of times if you're like, hey, teacher, I do all my stuff. I do it really well. Do I have to be here? Some schools are crazy. And they're like, nah, dude, you don't have to be here. And so I had it to where like 3 days a week, I would leave early. I would go pick up Justin Kitchler, who has a great episode on the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show, where, spoiler alert, we're both black belts now. And as we talked about in that episode, we were 16 and 17, and we were literally competing all over the country at Blue Belt and beating really tough adults. There just weren't a lot of 16 and 17-year-old blue belts. And so we were beating tough, tough adults like week in and week out. And it was just a really, really cool time for me. But I was also not going to school, training jiu-jitsu as much as I could, and just truly dedicated to this. And like for my dad, because that's always like a hard perspective to look at too, for parents that are hearing that, and they're like, well, what about discipline? What about this? What about that? And I just remember my dad's opinion during that time. And to me, it really has stayed true. It has really been such a great opinion. And people would ask him about that, like, well, you know, Josh gets to leave school three times a week. He's like, Josh is a straight A student, and he's allowed to leave because, you know what I mean? He does that. You know, Josh doesn't do anything other than train jiu-jitsu. He should get a job. You know, he's 16, he's 17. He should learn to work a real job. And I remember literally people had no business speaking into my life that were unhappy with their lives. Telling my dad this is like their opinion, like, oh, well, you know, this is what you're supposed to do so you can learn discipline. You can learn hard work. I'm training a martial art 10 times a week, as dedicated as any adult athlete. And I need to learn hard work, and I need to learn dedication, and I need to learn all those things. Nah, that was stupid. And my dad recognized that. My dad's like, he makes every workout. He makes every jiu-jitsu practice. All he does is this. His life is totally dedicated to this. But he should go work as a busboy somewhere so he can learn discipline and hard work and make $6 an hour. He's like, no, we're not doing that. And I even remember, you know, this, like, it's easy to kind of do that at 16 and 17 looking back. But when you turn 18, when you graduate, then it becomes much harder. Right? In my opinion, because as you're approaching that, so many people, and I know that there are kids that listen to the show now that maybe you should listen to this part. But there's so many people, and I remember getting this advice. This is like such a big thing that affected my life, was like some of the white and blue belts that were 25, 26, they had college degrees, and then they worked as bartenders, and they worked as servers, and they worked as things that had absolutely nothing to do with their college degrees. And I just remember talking to more and more of them as that pressure of, you need to choose where you need to go to college. You need to go to college because you get straight A's. And I had this like kind of fight in between. And then the third thing that happens, and this is for me, like, this was one of the first times looking back that success started to let me have some options. And it's crazy to think about. It's crazy to think like, okay, when I was 17 years old, I had to make this huge decision. And how the decision was the summer going into my senior year. And in my senior year, I barely needed any credit. So I could have left for my senior year probably if I needed to, or been homeschooled or something. In that summer, right before the summer, John Thomas, who has been on the show, you guys maybe have seen on YouTube, we've always called him Redheaded John. He is really, really decorated competitor already at that time. High level brown belt. I think he might have just gotten his black belt, but he's training full time at Alliance headquarters. And he calls me one day and he says, "Hey, I have a room, and you can just come and live with me indefinitely and train full time at Alliance. And what do you say?" And my dad was like, "I mean, he's like, you could do that, you know." He's like, "I think that we could basically pay for your food, you know, pay for your membership at the gym." And he's like, "And you just train full time." And I had that option. And then obviously, as everyone is pushing, you should be going to school, you should be going to college. Or I kind of had the option that I ended up taking of staying with my coach, staying with my team, you know, which isn't, it's just that the time of jiu-jitsu is different. You didn't see guys win world titles from, you know, even at lower belts, from anything but the big schools. They were just so much more significantly better. So I know that I would get better reps. But I wish I had a better way to explain to you guys. I just remember this time, and it's looking back, if I choose any other way, my life is vastly different. But I decide that I'm going to stay in town. I'm going to stay in Granite City and train under Kyle. That was really when I talk about on the podcast a lot how I had made these decisions of I'm not going to leave my hometown, or I'm not going to leave my area, and I'm not going to do steroids, but I want to be the best jiu-jitsu athlete that I can without those two things. This is really where that idea of I'm not going to leave came from, because at the time, all the other good jiu-jitsu athletes in St. Louis were leaving. And it was like, you know, there weren't a ton of really high-level guys, but there were some really high-level guys, and they were leaving. And I had the option. So do I take the risk? Do I not? I didn't. I just decided it wasn't the move. And what's funny is, like, I met Emily that summer. You know, my current wife. I wouldn't have started my jiu-jitsu school here if I would have made that decision differently. And then who knows what I would have went with if I would have actually went to school. We wouldn't have been able to afford it. I would have had to go into debt for, you know, a business degree or a whatever degree that really probably wasn't going to affect what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be a jiu-jitsu coach. That one thing did not waver ever, okay? And so from there, I got my purple belt, and jiu-jitsu competition got way harder, right? Because like I said, most of the highest level blue belts are leaving their towns and moving to the best places. They're training full-time. Well, now I do need to get a job. I don't make any money and I don't go to school. And so I start doing personal training with my dad. It's a lot of hours, and you're learning how to sell. You're learning how to build up a client list. Learned a lot of fun lessons with that. But I am still training as much as humanly possible with my coach. At this time, this is when we get to a place that we've talked about on the podcast a lot. And this is where I start to make the transition from mindless athlete that shows up that's just dedicated to reps, basically, to teacher. And I think this will be a good place to pause the story, and we will take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, we will start to look at the Jiu-Jitsu Garage and those days and how that turned into a massive jiu-jitsu team. And we'll get into that next. Hey guys, Josh McKinney. Just wanted to interrupt this podcast really quick and tell you about something absolutely free and mind-blowing that it is free that we have at simplifyingjiujitsu.com. So we're going through this story of my jiu-jitsu journey. And in my jiu-jitsu journey, you're about to hear me make this transition into becoming a coach. And I kind of started from baseline. I started from zero and I had no idea what I was doing. But over years and years of trial and error and conversating with other high-level coaches, I started to really get an understanding on how to teach jiu-jitsu, but more importantly, how different individuals learn jiu-jitsu differently. And when I started to discover this idea, we called it the three lenses. And these are the three perspectives that you will typically look through to learn jiu-jitsu. Once we started to identify that, we started to say, hey, this training method works better for this type of person. This goal works better for this type of person. And then one day I took all these ideas and I documented them into an ebook, and it is called The Three Lenses. And The Three Lenses is just such a good way for you to level up your understanding of jiu-jitsu. Whether you are a high-level grappler or whether you are in the very beginning stages, there's so much depth to the things that are talked about and the ideas that are talked about in this ebook that it will make you go, oh, I finally see a little clearer now. That gives me a little bit better perspective. And so no matter where you are in your jiu-jitsu journey, I'm sure you would love the Three Lenses ebook. It is only available at simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com/3. I'll make sure to link that in the description. But again, simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com/3. Let's go ahead and get back to the episode. And we're back. And so again, just a quick synopsis. We're about 5 years into the jiu-jitsu journey, 19, 20-ish, have a job, not doing as well as a competitor, and still kind of deciding where we're going to go to actually start a school. And so at that time, my coach had moved to St. Louis City. So it was probably only 20 minutes away, but it was really hard for a group of us that lived on the Illinois side to make it over during specific class times, especially the night classes, which was some of the best training. And so for us, we started training. I had a garage, and we matted the garage. It's like 400 square feet, and we started training in that garage. We called it the BJJ garage or the jiu-jitsu garage, and we had probably 8 of us total, maybe 10 of us total, and we would train. And you know, looking back, Justin Huff, who's been on the show, Justin Kitchler, who's been on the show, just to name a few of the people. But those guys, obviously my dad, those guys were they were consistent training partners. And we would make it over to Kyle's on Saturdays. We'd make it over to Kyle's for open mats during the day. It's just really hard to make those night classes. And so this is when we start training on our own. And of course, there is even more. And this is probably, looking back, the reason that I had that that really bad plateau. And that's like the best way to explain it is I tell you guys that I really don't experience a lot of plateaus in my training anymore. I always have something I'm working, and I always have a way I'm working it and a way I'm focusing on it. But at that time, this is like, looking back, the biggest and worst plateau I ever hit. It felt to be over a year. And it was just life transition. You know what I mean? It was just so hard at this stage of life to get better at jiu-jitsu. I didn't even know how to really get better at jiu-jitsu. I had been, you know, a 16 or 17, 18-year-old even athlete where my coach would say, do this, and I would do it. And he would say, do this 100 times, and I would do it 100 times. And now I have to be the one to make those decisions. I didn't know how. And so it's this weird transition, but I finish blue belt where I go like 18 months where I don't lose a match in my weight class. I might lose like one or two in the open class in that time. And I had like an 8-month span where every match I had won by submission at blue belt. I was competing once a month maybe. And it was like, you know, I was just doing so well. To then first tournament at purple belt, Chicago Open, big adult purple belt tournament. I submit like 4 guys and I lose in the final. And I was up on points, but I lose in the final of that. And it's like, oh, sweet, purple belt's going to be not much different than blue belt. Just got to get a little better. Boom, life transitions happen. I do not go more than winning a match in a day for the next, like, I think it's 18 months. I want to say it was 18 months undefeated and then 18 months of never going better than 1-1 on a day at a tournament. And obviously, not obviously, but for me, and this was a mistake, I started competing less. I was just tired of losing. I was competing every 2, 3 months, 4 months. And I even started to have some more, I had started to have performance anxiety at this time, right? Because I was putting so much pressure that I needed to win. I used to be a winner and people knew that about me. And I made some decisions to stay here and now I'm a loser. And I remember battling that. I remember battling that for that whole time where I didn't feel like I was getting better. I still was probably the best guy in my area, which was sucked even more. At least that I got to train with, cross training was just still not friendly at that time. And so one of the best guys in my area, and it's like, okay, well, how do I get better? Because the guys that I'm competing against in these bigger cities are better than me. And only reps I get against them, or the only reps I get against that high level of a guy, is when I have to compete against them in the tournament. And so it was really hard. And I remember, and I've told this story on the podcast, but I remember being on my, you know, living with my parents, probably 20 years old, and I'm on my couch with my girlfriend at the time, and which is Emily. And I just remember telling her, like, I know I want to coach. I know I want to be a jiu-jitsu teacher, but I just don't know if I want to compete anymore. I just, like, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of losing all the time and, you know, giving so much just to lose all the time. And I remember I literally was in tears when I told her that. And I dedicated 6 years of my life to that, to being a competitor. And I don't remember what she said. I just think she was more there with me, you know, there for me in it. And, you know, kind of like, I want to say that she said, you know, you can quit if you want. And that was like huge for me. It's like, oh, yeah, I don't have to do this. This isn't my job. You know, this is just something I get to do. And I just kind of on that, I was like, I'm going to do one more tournament. I'm just going to see, you know, I'm going to get in shape. I was kind of like fortunate. I was getting some good training partners at that time that were coming into Watson's. And so I was able to make it with them that were like higher level purple belt guys, had two really good ones. Shout, I don't know if these guys train, but shout out Dr. Chris and shout out Galen. Both of those guys were, that brought me back, you know, just getting to get those reps with, though they just really had really high level guards. And it was just guys I got to like, oh, these are the type of guards I'm competing against all the time. And I remember doing Chicago Open. I no different than any other tournament, minus the fact that my new car just got totaled at parked at Kyle Watson's house after he told me it was going to be fine. After he said, oh yeah, I said, hey, is it cool I park on the street? And he's like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That'll be fine. Don't worry about it. And then, a drunk driver at 3 a.m. T-boned my car in his, in his street and, then ran. And so, yeah, don't trust Kyle Watson with your car. And so, but that happens. And then I have to compete the next day. Maybe that took my mind off the competition and let me just go do jiu-jitsu. I don't know. But it was like up till then, it was my best performance ever. And like I had won pans at blue belt and I did well there, but it was like purple belt adult Chicago Open. You know, if you win that, it's just such a big Midwest tournament. It's such a big international, or you get a lot of international guys because of the airport. It's cheap to fly into Chicago. And I had like 5 matches that day. I won 4 of them by triangle. And then I won in the final by sweep with just a couple seconds left in the match. And it was like, oh shoot. I can do this. And it was crazy from there. Like, we had started making some changes in our training. We had started to actually positional spar more. And we just were like, we had tried to repetitive drill for a while because that had worked at blue belt. And it wasn't working at purple belt. And like, I was doing it a lot. I was dedicated to it. Me and Adam Marburger, shout out Adam Marburger, just got his black belt last Saturday. But Adam Marburger and I would show up at every Tuesday and Thursday at 6 a.m. and at my house and would drill knee cuts for an hour. And, you know, it worked for a while. And then it just kind of, that repetitive drilling kind of stopped working. And when we started to focus on positional sparring again and really, really spend weeks on the positions, like spin weeks where we're all playing spider guard because that's what we're dealing with at the tournament, it just totally changed back. And it just went to like, purple belt was hard. Oh no, purple belt's fun again. And I kind of got to finish purple belt winning a lot of matches and winning a lot of tournaments. I got my brown belt a couple days after winning Chicago Open another time. And so it was really cool to get the ball rolling again and to be a good jiu-jitsu competitor again. But again, this just, as much as it was like just staying in and just staying consistent, it also was training method. And looking back, like, man, getting back to those positional spars, and every time we would get away from them, we would end up back there. It's simple. I know that it's like, oh, well, that's not the sexy thing right now. People don't like to talk about positional spar as the most important way to train jiu-jitsu. But like, not to simplify what other people are doing, but like when you look at like the eco approach, it is taking scenarios and, you know, specific scenarios, turning them into, of course, turning them into games. But that's kind of what we're doing with a positional spar. The more we define it, the more you can focus on that one thing, right? You can focus on that one skill. And so that was actually what we were doing at Purple Belt, was just like, oh, we're losing to this one grip. Well, let's just spar it a bunch. And then we would get good at it. And we would also end up inevitably getting good at playing it because you were always using the other side of it too. And so, yeah, looking back, positional sparring, 10 out of 10, would recommend. But from there, it was time to start a school. And we had thought this, you know, my dad and I had always talked about, like, we're going to have a jiu-jitsu school. I told you guys, this has been my jiu-jitsu dream. This has just been my life dream, was to have a jiu-jitsu school. And all of a sudden, we do. We are jiu-jitsu coaches. My dad's buddy has connected to his dentist office, has an apartment, and it is a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom apartment. And he's like, hey, that structurally, you can knock out like all but this one wall in this building if you guys wanted to rent it. And so we did. And we had our entire jiu-jitsu school and my dad's personal training gym, because at that time we moved out of Madison and we moved into, my parents moved to Pontoon Beach, which is also Granite City. Granite City's, it's a bunch of different cities. I don't know why, but he moves there. And his personal training gym was in 650 square feet. And so that would have made my jiu-jitsu school in 900 square feet. And that is included with a bathroom. I know if you've never, you know, had to buy a house, but never known like the square footage of a jiu-jitsu school, you'd be like, oh, I don't know how big that is. Go to your jiu-jitsu school tonight and just ask your coach how many square feet of mats you have. A lot of them, like the baseline now, the standard now is 1,000 square feet of mats. My entire jiu-jitsu school and bathroom would fit on that mat space. And towards the end, we had, I'll tell you guys about that when we decided to move. But this is really where like I get to start as a coach. We start with kids, we start with adults, and we just start teaching jiu-jitsu. I can't stress this enough. If anyone ever wants to start a jiu-jitsu school and is trying to be a competitor also, just know that that is incredibly hard. And the reason is because you go from having good training partners to having people that can't even give you any realistic response. And so I just remember I'm like dealing with people headlocking me all the time now. And it's like, yeah, I'm competing at brown belt probably by this time, nobody's putting me in schoolyard headlocks anymore. And this is just what all my training partners do now. And, you know, we kind of had to work around that. And again, the answer was eventually, because we didn't come in like sure of ourselves that positional sparring is all we should be doing. And then eventually we were just like, man, these guys, they still suck. They're not getting any better. And I'm suffering for it. It's like, well, maybe I'll just get some positional spars in. Maybe I'll get better. And then all of a sudden I'm like, how come these guys that sucked are playing De La Hiva guard well? You know, like they're bad at everything. And I've never even really taught much De La Hiva. We've been positional sparring De La Hiva. They've gotten more reps there and they've just spent more time there. And so for me at that time, it was like, this is the answer. This is the way. And this is how we started to get kind of what our training method is at my school now, was we just would experiment. And also during this time, and this is another huge shout out Adam Marburger, I'm going to come clean on this. We started a t-shirt company. It was the Head Nod Squad. This is where the school name Head Nod HQ came from. And we were competing a lot in jiu-jitsu at, you know, when I was a purple belt, and we were the Head Nod Squad. We would always give people like the, you know, if you're watching on video, you know, the nod. And we just thought it was funny. We said we were, you know, handshaking was done and we were going to bring back the head nod. Again, stupid thing. We just thought it was funny. And we end up doing it. We end up creating a t-shirt company, and it kind of got some movement, and it really did start to grow. And we ended up not being able to dedicate enough time to it. But that's where the school name came from, was Head Nod HQ. It was just like, hey, this is what you guys are known for. Why wouldn't you call your school that? I'm like, okay, I guess, whatever. And so we did. School went like 4 months without having a name, which is pretty typical of me to do something like that. But the reason, and this is like, this is my last big jump in jiu-jitsu when I really look at progression and I look at skill, because this is where I go from still dealing with that same cycle that most people deal with, and this is like the last time that I'm going to deal with this. I start to get to train with some local black belts in the area. Like cross-training is still kind of frowned upon. People really aren't cool with it. But what we did was we lied. And it really was Adam lying. It wasn't me lying. So Adam decides with the Head Nod Squad, we're going to get some athletes, right? Some sponsored athletes. And we had a million sponsored athletes by the end of things. Early on, it's like, let's sponsor these local high-level guys. And so we start to just get all the best guys in the area. And then we were like, hey, we're doing Head Nod sponsored athlete training on Thursday morning. And then, you know, like, so for instance, Adam would go to Nick Sanders and he would tell him, hey, Nick, we're doing this training, you know, for sponsored athletes. We'd love to see you there. Luigi Fioravanti is going to be there. Ezra Lennon is going to be there. Kyle Watson is going to be there. You know, and Josh McKinney's naming all these guys. And Nick's like, oh, okay, sweet. Let's go. And so then after that, he would then go to all the other black belts whom were named, and he would be like, hey, Ezra, we have this training on Thursday. And so he would tell as if they were all already going to show up. And what ended up happening is all of the best guys in my area showed up at at the time I might have still been a purple belt, but showed up to some random purple belt's brand new gym every Thursday morning and then every Sunday morning. It's actually, we have a legendary Sunday open mat at 10:30. You guys are always welcome that listen to the show if you're ever in Granite City. But it's people from all different schools and has been for years. It started when we made up that lie and we would convince these guys to come train. And then, you know, it was like people would find out about it. You know, a new purple belt would find out about it and be like, can I get in on that? And I'm like, yeah, dude, make the room stronger. And we kept doing that. And when I started, and this is like where we'll kind of finish this episode, because you guys, once I've started the podcast, you've known life a little more for me. I've kind of talked about it over the last 5 years. I've continued to compete. The school has grown to two schools now. I run a jiu-jitsu podcast. I run Simplifying Jiu-Jitsu, which is like a video production jiu-jitsu company, and teach seminars. I teach jiu-jitsu to my students. I still get to compete a lot and have become a lot more of an accomplished competitor, even at black belt, even at adult. And with all that, like in this look back, that was really the thing that I think mattered the most was the training method that was discovered, right? When I look back on like every time I would lose and we just, when I say we, I mean whatever, whoever was with us on the team, it was always we. It was like, we just wouldn't accept it, right? We just wouldn't accept it. We'd just go, nah, screw it. We're going to get better. There's got to be an answer. There's got to be a different answer. Oh man, this past doesn't work. There's got to be a reason. And we just, that mindset really came from this time because I was getting to train with such high level guys. I was going, well, I can see what really, really high level is. And I know I'm not there. And these guys got there. And these guys were guys, again, that it stayed local. These were guys that had, you know, not stayed local, just never went to the super gyms, right? And so I'm like, it's possible. And I was getting that. And that's where this, this actually, I told you guys, I created last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, I told you guys that when I was a brown belt, I created my first ever jiu-jitsu product. And it's called Master Any Position in 6 Weeks. And still never become available. That is, spoiler alert, it will be available in like 2 months. And so maybe a little longer, maybe 2.5. But it will, that's where I started to get this method because I was learning from all these other guys and I was finding that getting reps is what mattered and deeper understanding is what mattered. But deeper understanding generally meant simpler understanding. Keep in mind, I'm going to every seminar, and I've always been this way. Every seminar that I've been able to go to, I'm going to. Every tournament I've been able to do, I'm doing. Every conversation, every question I've been able to ask a high-level guy, I'm asking. It's just always been my mentality. And that led to this place of like, okay, the things that matter. And I really like have kind of stayed true to this through the whole podcast. The things that matter in jiu-jitsu are understanding and repetition, right? And one of the best ways to find your holes in your understanding is to go against really tough people. And that has been the method. That has been the secret sauce of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show and your boy Josh McKinney. It has just been figure out how you like to get reps best, which for me, as I've pointed out, has been positional sparring. I love designated winner, but I still positional spar more than I do designated winner. I do designated winner more when I'm trying to add something new anymore for right now. But I positional spar when I'm trying to problem solve and I'm trying to really test a move. And so with positional sparring, I was like, okay, that's how I like to get my reps. And then how do I care about understanding? Simpler, the better. Let me know the goal that I need to accomplish, and I will just continue to find better ways to accomplish that goal, right? Okay, the goal is to knee cut the guy and pass the guard. Yeah, that's too broad, right? Can we simplify that goal? Yeah, your goal is to split his legs and then flatten him, right? Because if you do those two things, your knee cut is going to be inevitable. But then you start to even go deeper and you start to notice, and this is, again, I know I'm breaking down where my concepts have come from, but, you know, like I start, that's where jiu-jitsu was for me. It's like, man, and you even watch in 2019, I'm teaching this knee cut instructional at BJJ Fanatics. And again, it's all about use, split the legs and then flatten the guy, split the legs and then flatten the guy. And then I finally realized now, like looking back years ago, looking back in those years, like, oh, how you flatten was even more important than any of those other thoughts. Because how you flatten tends to be chest over chest. It's almost always chest over chest how you flatten, like 99% of the time when you're passing the guard. And so then I started to just focus on that. And I started to, you know, understand that part deeper and get reps with that on my mind and get positional spars with that on my mind. And this has, you know, is as organically as it developed, this has been the method that has helped me get good at jiu-jitsu. And I know this is a really long story to finish with. Get a deeper understanding and never stop positional sparring. But the truth is, that is the secret to getting good at jiu-jitsu. Obviously, you don't quit. You know, I stayed in it. As much as even the times that it was really, really hard, it was really frustrating when I had the right to quit, I didn't do it. I just flew the course, even though, looking back, my training method sucked then. You know, my schedule wasn't what it should have been. The intensities and the volumes, everything was off. But none of that mattered because I just stayed in it, right? And eventually I figured out those other things. But the other things are always, if you're looking at, okay, Josh, give me some actionable steps, find something that consistently deepens your jiu-jitsu understanding, whether it's instructionals, whether it's watching specific grapplers compete, whether it's listening to podcasts, whether even if it's a million different things. Consistently increase your jiu-jitsu understanding, consistently have a focus that you are getting reps on. No need to buy master any position in 6 weeks. That's the secret. You will get good at jiu-jitsu if you do those things, right? And then you can dig deeper and say, you need to make sure you do those things without injuring yourself, right? You get injured, you're not going to be able to do that first thing of just stay in and stay consistent, right? But that's all I have for you guys today. That's the end of my story, at least to this point, you know, to where we're at now, where I am, whatever the heck I am, podcaster, competitor, jiu-jitsu coach, or just some random black belt, whatever we want to define me as. But that's where we're at today. Besides that, that's pretty much all I've done. I hope you guys enjoyed this. We'll turn it over to Josh to close us out, and I'll tell you guys who we have next week. You guys are really going to love this next one. What's up, guys? Josh here again. Let's close out the episode. So I told you guys at the top of the episode and in the meat of the episode that we are going to do an episode that is going to be huge. 20 years at Black Belt. But who's the guest? So I got to sit down for about an hour and a half with the head of my affiliation, Jared Weiner, the head of Tac Team. And he's been on the podcast before, but it was a Zoom meeting. And it's just different getting to sit down in person. And if I have ever told you guys the importance of why we are using YouTube for the podcast, why we're having a video format podcast, it is for an episode like this. We finally, for the first time ever in podcast, broke down matches. And so I break down a few matches with Jared and even a few highlights, and we tell his story, and we just kind of go through what the last 20 years of Black Belt have kind of been like and where he's at now with it. And it is, I told my wife, every time that Jared comes in, and every time we talk, I have this idea of what he's gonna talk about, what he's gonna bring to the table. And every time it's different. Every time what he brings is different. And it's like, because this guy is a great example of someone who continues to evolve. And you will even see, you'll hear that evolution in the episode. And if you want to do all those habits that we talked about on the show, on this episode, get around people that do them. You know, get around people that have those habits already, and you will develop them too. But this is a guy that has just, you know, has flown the course and has seen so much when it comes to jiu-jitsu. And so, yeah, I think that you guys are really going to love this episode. And then I really think that the video format is going to be really fun for you guys. And so I know it's been fun for me just to, in I've been watching through it and getting it edited. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we got to do this with more episodes. But that's all I have for you guys right now. We will end today's episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Most importantly, I thank you guys for listening to my story. We're doing an episode that was just about me and not even about training method or something like that. So maybe you guys hated it. Maybe you're not even listening at this point. But hopefully you liked it. If you did, always feel free to let me know. It always helps me, always encourages me. But besides that, I hope you guys have a great day. And I hope today's episode helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day.